Support for IPR comes from Mearden, Supel & Downer, attorneys at law, dedicated to providing comprehensive legal solutions for Eastern Iowa since 1948. Located in downtown Iowa City and at MeardenLaw.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and beautiful leaves may be the star of the fall color show, but there are annuals and perennials that can also bring color into your yard or garden. In about 15 minutes, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will be here to answer your tree questions. But we're going to start the hour with Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here. And let's start with the topic of fall annuals. Aaron, that's not something that I guess I typically think about. Fall is not planting season for very many things. So what are we talking about here?
Yeah. So typically this time of year, usually around the beginning to middle of September, a lot of our summer annuals, you know, the petunias, the marigolds, the impatiens, start to get a little overgrown, maybe start to get a little tired looking, and we can actually replace those with plants that tolerate a light frost and can be colorful well in through the fall into the very, very beginning of winter. And so now is a great time to establish those cool-loving or cool-season annuals to enjoy often until Thanksgiving, at least, most years.
All right. So tell me about some of the options.
Well, first on the list for cool season annuals is pansy. Pansy will sometimes even overwinter under the snow. Doesn't mind a little bit of cold. There's some really fun varieties of pansy out now. We often think of this as a spring flower, and it's great for early planting in the spring. But there are some really great varieties that have dark purples and oranges that kind of feel very fall-like, that work well. One of my favorites this time of year are ornamental cabbage and ornamental kale. They're often in whites and pinks and purples, and you're relying on the foliage for this one. And the colors get more and more vibrant as the temperatures get cooler. So they're a really nice option. And then, of course, the big one that we see all over this time of year is chrysanthemum. They will tolerate the cooler temperatures pretty well. They have great color. And when we plant them this time of year, we treat them as annuals. And so you can get them and enjoy them in containers or annual beds by your front door, on your front porch, those kinds of places.
All right. Well, and let's dig down a little bit on that, because people are so confused about hardy mums versus annual mums.
Yes.
and all of that. So we do have mums that we could plant that are treated as perennials?
We do, but they need to be planted in spring, and they need to be varieties that will overwinter. There are quite a few different chrysanthemum varieties that aren't quite winter hardy for us here in Iowa. And even the ones that are winter hardy, when they're planted late in the season, like September, they don't have enough time to establish and often don't overwinter well. So if we want to use them as perennials in our perennial border, in our perennial garden, we need to plant them in the spring. We can absolutely enjoy them as annuals this time of year. And there are a lot of plants. Petunias would live year round if it didn't get cold. So would impatiens and marigolds. And so we treat other perennial plants, quote unquote, perennial plants as annuals all the time. We can do that with chrysanthemums too. It's okay.
All right. I think people just have that emotional attachment to whatever they buy and whatever they plant, and the idea that it should last forever.
And mums are big plants,
yeah.
So it feels like it should stick around a little bit longer. But it's nice that they're big. They can fill in a big area. You only need one or two of them. And you can enjoy those colors all the way through the fall season.
So thinking about like the ornamental cabbage and kale and the pansies and the mums, I mean, if you want to plant for fall with annuals, what is your window? And when do you need to plant so that you'll have a really beautiful show?
Now is really a great time, and you can plant, it depends on the weather, of course, but you can plant into late September as well. Typically, when we start to get to October, it's you could do it, but you wouldn't be able to enjoy them as long, and they wouldn't get as established and filled in later in the season. But really, any of this stuff tolerates light freezes. Typically, in much of the state, we start to see freezing temperatures overnight in mid-October, a little earlier in the north, a little later in the south. And so we want to do it before that time frame. And so mid-September, early to mid-September is often a good time.
All right. And now this is a time of year when I often feel a lot of envy of people who really are the kind of gardeners who plan ahead and their yards look beautiful in every season. And in fall, there are these beautiful perennials that do interesting things. So, Cindy, give me some advice. What are the kinds of perennials that we should plant in thinking about what they'll look like in fall?
Right. So there are a number of perennials that are attractive into fall. And sometimes that means, you know, September, October, maybe even a little bit later. So the ornamental grasses usually steal the show in fall. So having some of those, because they have some nice kind of seed heads that start to appear in late summer, are certainly something that are easy to grow, that start to become stars of the show late in the season. And then there's other things too, like turtle head and toad lily. I have toad lily in my shade garden, and it doesn't start blooming until sometime in late September or October. So it's one of the last things to bloom in my garden, and it's like little tiny orchids. So it's this little spotted flower, which is kind of a nice kind of end of season bloom.
And what does it look like before it blooms? Because I'm sure that's present in your garden all summer long.
Right. It's just kind of a background plant, or kind of a front of the border plant. It's got fuzzy green leaves. The leaves look good all season. It's one that kind of is late to emerge in the spring. So it's just kind of, you know, there. It's just surrounded by other things that bloom. And then when everything else is kind of done, then here comes this tiny little white flower that's spotted purple called toad lily. So it's a fun thing to have.
Nice. Let's talk specifics with ornamental grasses. Mm-hmm. I know that we all see other people's ornamental grasses, or the ornamental grasses that sometimes are in ditches, and we think, wow, I wish I could have that. But you have to be a little bit careful with ornamental grasses, don't you?
You do. You don't want the ones that are spreading in the ditches, though they're gorgeous this time of year. There are other ornamental grasses that stay a little bit better in a clump, and they don't spread all over the place or reseed. So if visiting a garden center, you probably have several options on both native and non-native ornamental grasses that you can use. And now's a good time to check them out, because you'll see some that are starting to fall color, some that have these kind of showy seed heads. So it might be a switchgrass. It might be a miscanthus that's a little more of a clump type of miscanthus. Or it might be a variegated feather reed grass. So that has some nice variegated foliage all summer and then produces this kind of attractive seed head in summer. So there's lots of options. You also want to think about grasses height-wise too. So there are some grasses that are really big that can get, you know, 12 feet or more. The hardy pampas grass is just now starting to bloom, and it will get, you know, 10 to 15 feet tall at this time of the year. So you need a big space for that one. And then there are other like blue oak grass, which has kind of a smaller habit and stays generally below 3 feet, or even little feather reed grasses that are about 5 to 7 feet tall. So you've got lots of options in grasses.
Should you think about creating some kind of barrier if you're going to be planting ornamental grasses to try to kind of keep them in a specific area in your yard? Or with most of the well-behaved grasses, are they going to take care of that themselves?
Most of the clump-forming grasses shouldn't spread much. I think with any kind of plant in your garden, you should be aware if it's reseeding somewhere else. A barrier wouldn't stop that reseeding habit. And if you see that it's starting to expand by roots beyond its space, then it's time to think about dividing it, to kind of containing it. And then you know that maybe I need some edging or something to kind of contain this one, to keep it in a smaller, more confined space.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh is going to join us in just a couple of minutes to answer tree questions as well. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Security Abstract Company, providing trusted, comprehensive abstract and title services to the Johnson County real estate market since 1898, located in downtown Iowa City and at securityabstractcompany.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And now with us on the air is Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today, Mark. And of course, they are all here to answer your questions. You can call 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've already got a whole bunch of questions waiting in the queue here for you today. Linda would like to know, Aaron, is it still okay to plant flowering container perennials such as daisies, black-eyed Susans, lavender, or roses?
Some of that stuff will be a little challenging this late in the season, in particular lavender and roses. You'll want to get it in the ground as soon as possible. And these plants may be good candidates for a little extra protection over the winter. So after the ground freezes, which is usually after Thanksgiving in much of the state, you can add a little extra blanket of mulch over these plants to help them overwinter a little bit better, because they won't have as much time to get established. I would definitely get them in the ground as soon as possible and then think about adding that mulch after Thanksgiving or so to give them a little extra help.
All right. Here's a tree question for you, Mark, from Dan. He says, we have three large old silver maples in our backyard, and I wonder why they got the name silver. They're dark green all summer, then the leaves turn ugly brown and fall off. Where is the silver?
Actually, the silver is in the underlying portion of the leaf. If you look, and when they flip open, they do have kind of a silver look in that under portion of the leaf.
I thought maybe that was going to be a stumper, but you know everything. All right.
Well, I don't know if that's the scientific reason, but they do have, you asked where the silver is,
yep.
And it is kind of that whitish silver on that underlying portion of the leaf.
All right. Here's a question from Scott in Cedar Rapids, Cindy. I have a privet hedge that's looking a little stressed from the drought. Leaves aren't as green as usual. I was going to trim the hedge down this fall to 2 to 3 feet. It's about 10 feet now, in hopes to make it easier to trim and give it some new life. Should I wait another year? Should I give it a good watering before and after trim down? What should I do?
Yeah, I would probably give it a good watering this time of year, and I might wait until trim this down until after it's really dormant in the winter. So maybe go out and do that pruning maybe sometime in February or March. That will force it to encourage a lot of new growth, and you'll have a smaller hedge. And then maybe it still has all of those leaves that it needs as long as it has them. Throughout the fall. Sometimes I think if we prune some hedges back too early in the fall, it encourages new growth that may not have time to acclimate. So wait until it's cold and there's no leaves left. So maybe in like February or March, and then do your pruning. Privet's tough enough to take it.
All right. And here's a question from Brady. And I'm not sure if this is a Mark question or an Aaron question, so you guys help me out. He says, I have read conflicting claims on whether the American filbert is self-pollinating, that's the hazelnut, or if it needs a second tree or brush or a shrub nearby. We're looking at planting one primarily for aesthetics and not as concerned about the hazelnut harvest, although some would be nice. Will it survive if we plant only one and just not produce as many nuts? Also, are the nuts messy like walnuts or have any compatibility issues with other plants or trees that we should be aware of? So which one of you wants to grab that?
I'll let Aaron start and then I'll chime in on the messiness and stuff like that.
Great. Go, Aaron.
Well, nearly all fruit trees are going to and nut trees are going to pollinate better with a partner. And so if you want to have a good nut set for wildlife or for whatever, then it would be good to have that pollinating partner nearby. Sometimes you'll get nuts without it because plants don't always follow the rule books that we create. But for the most part, and this is true for nearly all fruit and nut trees, you'll get a better fruit set if you have a partner.
All right, Mark.
Well, if we're talking true hazelnut as a shrub, the one thing I'll tell them is, at least in the wild, a lot of times the critters will get to the nuts before you do, as far as messiness.
So there's no
and
mess.
So you have to kind of be watching for them to ripe and get in there and pick them right away. But their husk, especially on hazelnut, tends to kind of hang on the plant. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't see it as, you know, like a bunch of walnuts falling. It's the nuts themselves a lot of times that husk will open and then the nut will fall. So I wouldn't consider them super messy, but just like anything else, messy is kind of our own personal definition.
Yes, and I do know people who grow hazelnuts who have a really hard time getting to them before the critters get to them. But it sounds like in this case, they're not necessarily interested in harvesting. So I think critter watching is a nice benefit that goes along with it.
And they can have some fall color, too. Hazelnuts mm-hmm. have some kind of maroonish red fall color. So there's some characteristic there in the landscape, too.
All right. You can join the conversation with your questions about plants or trees. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Cindy, here's a question from Earl. Are there any types of organic mulches that you would recommend for or around a home that don't attract insects?
Well, I think most organic mulches, if they're larger and if you're only putting in a couple of inches, shouldn't attract many insects. I think if you add a layer that's, 4 inches or more, then you're making that kind of nice moist environment that maybe more insects would be attracted to. But that's a good question. It might be a Donald question. For the next time that he's on, I don't think I see too many insects under any type of organic mulch if you keep it to about 2 inches. So that's the answer.
Donald last week talked a little bit about how many of the negative insects that we see, things like carpenter ants and those types of things, don't like mulch. They want a full chunk of wood to work in, not all these little pieces. And so we do often see insects associated with mulch because they're there because that's what a good ecosystem has as part of it. But that doesn't mean that those insects are causing problems for that structure, nearby structure.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Greg is on the line in Adel. Hello, Greg.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got an old bur oak tree. It's probably 3 or 4 foot in diameter. And it seems like all summer, the top, the end of the branches, 1 to 3 or 4 feet appear to be dying or just are leafless. I was wondering if that's an issue or just, and we had a lot of acorns this year.
So that's a great question, Greg. Anytime I start to see kind of die back or not leafing out kind of uniformly on the top, I start getting concerned about some type of general decline, especially on an older mature oak. The question I would ask is, has there been any kind of activities around that tree, changing the site or anything in the last 3 to even 8 years. If there has been any kind of site changes, that can cause some decline. But when I start to see kind of a uniform kind of dieback or decline, there could be some root issues or something causing that tree to die back, especially if it's uniform on the top.
Yeah, we haven't had any activity underneath there, really. We had an addition put on close to it, but that was 15 or more years ago.
Yeah, that was probably long enough, because usually, you know, like I say, 3 to 8 years, if there's major site changes. But even if the flow of water changed or anything like that, but you may want to have an arborist take a closer look at the situation. Because, again, if it's showing uniform, that tells me that it's not necessarily a disease or insect problem, but there could be some kind of stress causing that on that tree.
Okay, and I know it's a huge tree, so watering it, I know water out on the perimeter of the branches, but the canopy, but still that would take a lot of water, right, to do it.
Right, we've always talked about that. Any tree would appreciate water, especially during dry periods. Larger trees usually have been able to work it out, but if you have a source of water during these dry periods and you can put a soaker hose out on the edges, give them a little water, all that is going to help. But I would probably have someone come take a closer look at the situation to see if there's something about the surroundings or something that might indicate what that stress might be.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Greg. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Dave is on the line next in Ankeny. Hello, Dave.
I have a question about, I have spiras, the bushes. They're kind of a dark green leaf, red, you know, pretty bright, red flowers, and also about a Cleveland pear tree. And I'm wondering if this would be a good time of the year to trim it back a little bit, cut off a few branches and so forth.
Aaron?
Fall is probably the worst time to do this work, actually. What happens is pruning often encourages new growth, and we don't want to encourage new growth this time of year because it won't overwinter as well. So late winter, early spring is the best time to tackle these projects in pruning. And I understand it. When I'm out working in the garden this time of year, I feel the urge to do this work, but it is best done February, early March for both of these plants.
But it's the nicest time to be outside right now.
I know. It is so nice to be outside. And that's part of what makes the urge. I get
yep,
it.
I
was just doing it last night, but I was not pruning. I wanted to, but I'm going to save it for February.
All right, Dave, thanks for your call. Next up, we've got Mary in Waterloo. Hello, Mary.
Hello. I have 4 arborvitae trees that were damaged by deer last winter. And I heard on your program last spring that it was iffy about them coming back, but to water them, fertilize them, and pray. Well, I've done that this summer, and they are coming back. They're getting green. How do I protect them this winter now from the deer?
Mark?
Sure. You're going to want to fence them or cage them or something, Mary. I mean, or some kind of netting that you can keep far enough away that they won't push it in. But you're going to have to basically put something there so they can't get to those. There are some different repellents, but there's a varying amount of success with the repellents. And often during the winter, you have to keep reapplying. So if you can do something to restrict access to those areas, that's going to be your best bet.
All right. I'm so glad they've come back. Good luck with that, Mary. I hope you can manage to put something up. And that is, Aaron, that's what we should be doing this time of year, right?
That's
the outdoor work.
Exactly.
All right. From John in Linn County, Mark, another tree question. This spring, I planted Norway spruce trees in a windbreak. They're doing well at 2.5 to 3 feet tall. Should I protect them from winter winds? They're in an exposed north-northwest pasture.
The spruce, I don't get as concerned, but if there is a concern and there's not a lot of them, sometimes just putting up like a little kind of burlap fence on that kind of southwest side. But in general, I think the key, and I think Aaron and Cindy would agree, is getting those trees continually watered this fall up until freeze is going to help them a lot. But I tend to see that wind damage more on arborvitae and white pine. But if he really thinks he's concerned about it, I've used kind of like two posts and then put burlap in between it and put it on that southwest side to kind of screen it a little bit. That will help. But in most of the time, Norways do pretty well.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the question, John. And we are going to take another short break. If you have questions, email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call 866-780-9100. With me today, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturists Aaron Stile and Cindy Haynes. This is Talk of Iowa.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including above and beyond cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialists Aaron Stile and Cindy Haynes. They are here to answer your questions. You can call 866-780-9100 with your question, or you can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's get to the phones. Karen is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Karen.
Hi, just a second.
Are you there, Karen?
Yeah, I am. I am. I had to get my husband off the other phone.
Okay.
There.
What's your question?
I have an area that has a lilac tree, and it has hostas planted around it. It's kind of a circular area, and there's kind of a bare place in that circular area that I was interested in planting a bush, possibly. Excuse me, that doesn't get any higher than maybe about 3 feet, and it would be easy to maintain and keep it at that height. And it's kind of in a sunny area, and I was wondering if you had any ideas of what would work well there.
Cindy?
Sure. Do you want something that's a woody plant, or would you think of something like a perennial? Because I'm like daylilies that would bloom at a different time. Or
I would like something. I would like a perennial type bush. And I don't, you know, just something attractive. Not, it wouldn't necessarily have to bloom. It would be nice if it did.
Right. Well, the full sun location, something like some of the different roses, some of the hardy roses would be really good there. You've also got even those ornamental grasses if you want something that blooms even later in the season or does something a little bit later in the season. This also might be a good place for, an evergreen even. So like a dwarf conifer that would be there all winter that would provide some kind of structure as well.
Yeah, I was thinking of something in those along those lines, something that, you know, would be pretty much showy or there during the winter as well.
Right. So, there's lots of dwarf conifers. Out there, little dwarf Mugo pines, little dwarf. Well, this is one of those things you need to visit a nursery and kind of select one that you like the shape. If is it going to be this cone shape or is it going to be something kind of round? Or do you want something weeping? So you think about those kind of shapes. And dwarf conifers generally only grow a few inches at most a year. So they stay fairly small. Read the label because they don't always stay at 3 feet. So it might get a little bigger than 3 feet over time. But that might be something that would be attractive all year. It's not going to bloom, but it's going to provide some kind of structure and be attractive throughout the season and look good with a lilac and some other things around it.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Karen. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's an email question for you, Aaron, from Andrea. My husband excitedly bought some blooming mums a few weeks ago, and now they're fading, and there's still a lot of fall left. Are they one and done?
For flowering, yes. And sometimes the flowers will fade, especially if the plant dries out too much. So you'll want to make sure that if you go out and get another one, that you don't accidentally let it get too dry, because the first thing that goes when it gets dry is the flowers.
All right. And Mark, here's a tree question from Diane in Riverside. I would like to replace a tree that was damaged and had to be cut down. We live along a fairly busy highway. The area is a low spot, but the drainage is pretty good. We'd like some shade, but we don't want anything that gets too tall and would interfere with power lines. What do you think?
If the drainage is good and visual's not, I will speak my best Jeff Isles and say there are many, many different crab apples that might fit that. I could think of Japanese tree lilac. As long as the drainage is good, there's a number of kind of small to medium-sized trees that might fit that. We have a publication called Rethinking Maple that has some smaller trees listed in there that they can find online, but I think there's a number of species. And with crab apples, you can get them from 8 feet up to 20 to 25 feet. So there's a lot of variability depending on the key with crab apples is buying one that is very tolerant to apple scab. And a lot of the new selections are.
All right. And hopefully it'll look beautiful for you in the springtime. She had a second question, too. She said, I heard that a tree should not be planted too close to an area where a diseased tree has been removed. What is a safe distance for replanting?
So a lot of times it depends on what the issue was. If we know it was something like verticillium wilt, there's a lot of species that you wouldn't plant in that area at all. But if it just declined or had some rot or something like that, I would say in general, if there's concern, if you're 3 to 5 feet away where you can get a nice hole and dig, you shouldn't have an issue unless you know of a specific disease. The verticillium wilt is the one that I would be most concerned about if it was something like that. But in most of the other issues, a lot of that stuff isn't going to be in the soil. But a lot of times I don't like to plant right back in the same spot if I can avoid it. So I would say at least 3 to 5 feet away.
All right. Let's go back to the phones now. Becky is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Becky.
In Dubuque?
Yeah. What's your question?
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. Hi. Yes. I had a couple of questions. One was about a lilac tree bush that we planted probably 15 years ago, and it has never flowered, and I wonder if we just chose the wrong variety or something. And the other one is our bur oak has produced just a bucket load of acorns this year and hasn't done that for like 20 years. Is that how they work, or is that a sign of something?
Aaron?
Go ahead, Aaron, lilac, and I'll talk about the oak.
I'll let Mark talk about the oak. For the lilac, I would definitely look at the environmental conditions that surround this plant. Lilac needs at least 6 hours of direct sunlight a day. So sunlight hitting the leaves of this plant to flower well. I would expect to see flowering at this point if it's been in the ground this long. Typically, it's only about 4 to 6 years after planting that we sometimes don't see flowers, and often we see them sooner than that. So I would look at the environmental conditions. You can also do some good pruning. If you remove the oldest branches, again, this would be done in February or March. It can help reinvigorate, get new branches or new stems growing from the base of the plant, and often newer growth will bloom better than older growth. So you can look at that as well.
All right.
Can you tell me how much to prune off? How much should I prune off if I do that?
So you're going to remove the oldest branches about 6 inches from the ground, and you don't want to remove more than a third of the entire plant. So that may only be one or two branches, depending on how big it is.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And then the oak question, Mark.
Okay. So woody plants in general, some can respond to different stresses like drought stuff and then have a higher flower production, and then in turn you get higher seeds or more seed production. But oaks in general tend to basically bur oaks will produce every year, and it's kind of on a cycle, but every so many years we'll have a bumper crop. And I will tell you, I've been in Eastern Iowa for 21 years, and around the Iowa City area, we've probably only had a bumper crop in that 21 years, maybe two times. And it varies from species to species. But I remember in Cedar Rapids about 8 years ago, we had a bumper crop of bur oak. And a few years later, we had a bumper crop of white. So there's a lot of variability. The one thing it tells you, though, is those flowers open up early in the spring. So we had good weather and good conditions for pollinating, and we just had a really good crop. We do have some stresses, which we're always concerned about, but they tend to come in these cycles every so many years.
All right. Becky, thanks a lot for your call. And as we're running out of time, I'm going to summarize some of the questions we've got on the line right now. Mary in Indianola says that she's got a lilac bush in the way of a new compost pile and she needs to move it. Planted from a little twig 3 years ago. Can she move it now? Cindy?
If she could wait to move it, it might be a little easier. If she could wait to move it once again in that kind of March, April timeframe, it's probably not going to bloom well if she moves it now or if she moves it later. If she does have to move it now, water it really well, and probably continue to water it as late as possible into the season until the ground freezes.
All right. And Linda in Cedar Rapids wants to know if she can use leftover dish or shower water to water the garden as long as it's good quality soap. Aaron?
It shouldn't be a problem. I mean, I suppose over time you could get a buildup of certain maybe salts or something like that. But typically it's not an issue in the garden.
All right. And Gerald's on the line in Waterloo. Very quickly, Gerald, what's your question?
Yeah, I've got a windbreak that's been planted about 30 years ago outside of blue spruce inside arborvitae. And I, on north and west side, I took a couple down disease, but now they put a power line through, and so they've trimmed it up pretty nasty. So I want to take the rest of them down. Would it be a good shrub or small evergreen that I could plant in front of those to kind of hide the arborvitae that's kind of, you know, dead, you know, a couple feet down?
Mark, you want to take that one?
Well, I can think of a couple. Nine bark would be a good shrub. A number of the dogwoods, red osier dogwood, gray dogwood, wild plum. There's a number of good native high bush cranberry, viburnum, arrowwood viburnum. A lot of it's going to depend on your soil, but those are a number of shrub species depending on size, color, and stuff that you want to pick from.
All right. That's a lot of options. We also have kind of a philosophical question, Mark, that maybe we should spend a whole hour talking about. But which is better for the environment, planting an oak or a crabapple tree?
Actually, if you want to talk pollinators, oaks. We know in Iowa alone, there's a couple hundred different species of caterpillars and pollinators that utilize oak in one way or another. Crab apples are on that list and provide some benefits too. But
plant the oak.
I'm going to have to vote for oak.
All right, we're out of time. Mark Vitosh, thank you so much.
Tell Jeff I said that.
All right. And Aaron Stile and Cindy Haynes, thank you both.
Thank
you're welcome.
This is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa.